Welcome into Year's a Cure right here on AM 580. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, right here in studio. Always check out our website, veritasmedical.com. Of course, along the way, if you have any questions, feel free to give us a call or text, 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800. And again, check out the website, veritasmedical.com. You can check out past archived programs there and catch up on programs if you've missed one, obviously. Also with us on the show today, we have Melody Wilkes, health coach, and Morley Robbins with us today as well. And so we've got a full house, very exciting. And good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you? Good morning, Melody and Morley. They're both.
Good morning.
There you are. Okay. I didn't know. I was like, Morley's with us, right? Yeah, there he is.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So good to see everybody today. Did you ever find out, Morley, if eating oysters is a good thing for copper?
Oh, it is.
I love oysters. I asked you that last time we were on the show, and I said, hey, if I eat a lot of raw oysters, is that good for me? And, you know, some people say, oh, the mercury content's so bad and this, that, and the other. But I think the copper content is what I'm going for.
Yeah, I think not to rain on your parade, what we don't know is what have these oil spills done? What is the mercury in the water? There's all sorts of stuff that's in the water to the environment for oysters to grow. Mm-hmm. I don't know of a modern mineral analysis of oysters. They really stopped doing extensive mineral analyses back in the 1950s.
Yeah.
So it's been 62 generations of sort of unknown. And historically, yes, oysters are an amazing source of bioavailable copper. We just don't know what the modern oyster brings.
I like anchovies too. I mean, I love anchovies. I know some people can't tolerate them, but I mean, I'll eat anchovies literally at least two or three times a week. And apparently, they're real good in copper too. So, anyway.
Yes, they are. Yeah. No, you're doing all the right stuff. It's just that we're flying blind because we don't really know what we don't know what the mineral content is of modern food today.
Yeah. Well,
the nutrient tables look really impressive. You got a lot of eye candy. They look really glitzy, but the data is from the 1950s.
Yep.
And that's the disconnect.
And what we've done with modern food is fortify it, unfortunately. So even on the package, it may look like you're getting your daily recommended values. But I think there's a lot of debate on those daily recommended values, but how much of that's from a fortified synthetic form of vitamin C and vitamin A and D and iron and all this fortification. So that's kind of a whole nother topic. Morley, I wanted to first welcome. Thanks for joining us again on our first Monday for November. I don't think we've talked on air since my jaunt over to Dallas a few weekends ago to the mitochondrial conference. And I've talked about it on the show. The Monday I got back after the conference, I discussed it. But the take-home message there was, for me, was what we already have discussed on our show, is Americans have lost their resiliency. They have lost their resistance and resiliency to disease. It's like we're just sitting ducks. We're walking wounded. We're weak, weak. Physiologically speaking, we're very weak and susceptible. You know, like Weston A. Price found in the 1920s, 1930s, these native tribes from around the globe, when they started to eat enriched flour and sugar, they became weakened and susceptible to tuberculosis and cavities and cancer, heart disease. He noticed this loss of resiliency, and he noted it was mostly because of, he felt like, loss of the fat-soluble vitamins. But that's what I see in the modern world. Modern Americans have a huge loss of their resiliency and their capacity to withstand metabolic disease, I'll call it, metabolic chaos. I mean, when 40 to 50% of children in America have a chronic disease, something's really, really, really wrong. Right. Kids should be the most resilient. Our 18, 19, 20-year-olds should be our strongest, fittest, most resilient, and they're our sickest. And if 40 to 50% of those kids are sick now, imagine 10 and 20 years from now, 30 years from now, when they're supposed to be getting adult diseases, and they're already going to be 40 years into an adult disease. It is incredible. And the conference, of course, was about the mitochondria. And all these diseases, they named 30 different diseases, chronic diseases, and showed the exponential rise just in the past 2 decades, really. This hockey stick rise, the same thing you saw as you started looking at all this 10 to 12 years ago. It was unbelievable when you really look at these slides and study the statistics and the numbers and just this avalanche of disease. Something's going on. Obviously, it's not the genes. And so they were talking about the mitochondria, and kind of the take-home was, we've got to help these people get unstuck, meaning get their mitochondria unstuck, because their mitochondria is stuck in this low-energy, high-inflammatory state, producing all this exhaust, the free radicals, the reactive oxygen species. They're stuck. The mitochondria is stuck in this mode. So the carburetor basically stuck in spewing out black smoke with very little energy coming out, very little miles per gallon. So you're just putting down the road at 5 miles an hour, blowing a ton of black smoke. That's the American population. And they were all scratching their heads at the conference on how do you get these people unstuck? How do you get the black smoke to clear up and get their miles per gallons back up to 40 miles a gallon or whatever? And they really didn't have an answer.
I'll tell you what. I'll give you $1,000.
I could use $1,000. I got six kids.
And everyone listening can be my witness. I'll give you $1,000 for every time they use the word ferrooxidase at the seminar.
Right. That would be a big fat zero.
I was going to try to help you buy that ranch, man.
Yeah, maybe next year. and it was very funny to me that they did come. They did a self-critique. They said, remember 3 years ago at this mitochondrial conference when we recommended you take L-carnitine and D-ribose and CoQ10 and these five different nutrients that are, quote-unquote, fuel for the mitochondria? And they were laughing at themselves, basically. Not that those aren't fuel for the mitochondria. They're not going to hurt you if you take them, I guess. But it's not the answer. It didn't fix the problem. It didn't get these chronically ill people over the hump and turn their mitochondria back to where it needed to be. And so it was sad to me that people have missed the boat. So where I'm going with this, obviously, I think people know one of the, if not the biggest thing that keeps you stuck and keeps you susceptible and keeps you without that resiliency is a lack of bioavailable copper and excess iron. And we can go through that again. And Morley, probably, I know you're going to want to talk about the hyperglycemia, insulin resistance, diabetes, because that's a perfect example of this. We're sitting ducks. We're so much more susceptible to this cascade of events that we end up calling type 2 diabetes. But why? Why the cascade in the last 10, 12, 20 years, this diabetes epidemic? Yes, we're eating processed carbs and sugar. But there's more to the story than that, as we'll get into with you. But that's kind of how I wanted to intro that topic. Of course, you can go off with any direction you want, but any thoughts and comments on that? And I surely could give you some more on that mitochondrial conference, but I wish they would invite you there to give a talk and enlighten some of these doctors.
Here are a couple thoughts. One, I just had this insight this morning as I was reading, yet more information that was a penetrating look into the obvious, which is we need more bioavailable copper. But it occurred to me that the challenge we face is maybe not so much the public, but I think the professional audience, the practitioners, the nurse practitioners, the whatever the degree of doctor is, or whatever therapist you're dealing with. It's not unlike trying to teach Russians who grew up in Russia during the 1930s to 1980s. It's like trying to teach them what democracy is. It is so foreign to them. They've been so indoctrinated in a different ideology that when you start to talk about democracy, it falls on deaf ears.
Mm.
Because it's a completely different paradigm of how the body works.
Yeah.
And the real reference point, and what's really helped me understand all this, and hopefully it's helping others, is we live on a planet with oxygen. And we've got to be able to activate that oxygen, and we've got to be able to deactivate the accidents with that oxygen that are called oxidants. Well, there's only one metal on the planet that can do both of those. Activate oxygen, deactivate oxidants is called it's called copper. And what allows cholesterol to rise in the body is copper deficiency. So as soon as we have a cholesterol issue, we know we have a copper issue. It takes 11 molecules of oxygen to make one molecule of cholesterol. So what is cholesterol? It's an oxygen sink in the face of low copper. It's a protective measure by the body.
Yeah, it's a reaction to an environmental
right. The body knows that there's a mismanagement of oxygen. It says, well, here, let me give you this, I don't know what you would call it. Is it a lipid? I don't know. I really don't know what class it would be, but let me give you this chemical that'll hide 11 oxygen so you don't have to deal with it right now. And then let's deal with the L-carnitine D-ribose CoQ10 that was at that conference several years ago. Well, all three of those have a relationship with copper. You can't the burning of fat. What is L-carnitine doing? It's trying to get fat into the cell. But if you can't engage the beta oxidation enzymes to metabolize the fat, what good is that going to do? If you can't work with the ribose sugar, which requires copper, what good is that going to do? If the CoQ10, which is, it's an electron shuttle, as you know, but it's also an antioxidant. Do you realize that there's an enzyme I just learned about recently? It's called ubiquinol oxidase. And as soon as you hear the word oxidase, you're like, uh-oh, copper must be involved. So in a body that's low in copper, do you think the ubiquinol oxidase is going to be working? Of course it's not. And so then what do they give to people with high cholesterol? Statins. What do statins do? Lower CoQ10. And do you think it might be attacking that oxidase enzyme? I certainly think it does. And so the challenge is keeping our sanity in a copper deficient world. It's not just lack of resilience and lack of resistance. It's the temptation to want to check yourself into the nearest behavioral health institution. Once you learn copper metabolism, all of this, all of those hockey sticks that you're talking about make perfect sense, but yet we're bumping up against, well, what's a good source of copper? Mm-hmm. How do we begin to reinfuse the body with it? And then we have the rebound insanity of so many forms of copper that are in supplemental forms don't work. So it's just layers of frustration that are easily elevated in a world that doesn't understand what copper is, what it does, and how is it best restored in the human body.
Right. Well, I want to get elementary for the listeners to kind of reinforce to them kind of the mitochondrial function, the M1 versus M2, and I think we've talked about it on the show, but not very much if we have. So basically, listeners, envision your cells. They're full of these carburetors called mitochondria, hundreds of them, some cells, I think thousands of them. But so a cell's just kind of doing its thing. It's got to make energy. You make energy by bringing oxygen in. And what delivers oxygen to the cell is iron through the blood. Iron carries the oxygen, and the iron's got to hand it off to copper inside that carburetor, and then copper shuttles it through. And you make energy, and you make water. You turn that oxygen into energy and water, basically. So the cell's just there doing its thing. And then a stressor hits that cell. So think of back in the day, you know, ancestrally, your great-great-grandparents, a stressor would have been a germ or trauma, pretty much. That were the stressors that were around. So that cell gets hit by a germ, or it gets in a fight with a bear and there's trauma to the tissues, and those cells are damaged. So that cell's carburetor, for a moment, needs to quit just going about its normal day-to-day activity, and it needs to go into fight-or-flight mode, basically. Stressor hits the cell, and it flips into this state called M1. M1 is where energy production goes down and reactive oxygen species go up, these free radicals we talk about that can damage us. Well, for a moment, they're needed and beneficial because that's what kills the germ. And those free radicals also, the reactive oxygen species, also can kind of burn up that damaged tissue, chew up, burn up, you know, like a flamethrower, basically burning out the old damaged tissue. And so that's all necessary, needed. We need to kill the germ, and we need to clean out the damaged tissue from trauma. But then we need to flip to the next state, and that's the healing state. So that carburetor, that mitochondria, has got to kick back into from a low-energy, high-exhaust mode. It's got to flip the switch into high-energy, high-healing mode. So it needs to flip into M2. M2 is high-energy output. Your free radicals go down because you're dealing with them appropriately, and all the healing factors go up, and the tissue repairs and heals itself, and the cell gets back to normal. That's it in a nutshell. A cell's living its basic normal life. A stressor comes, so it has to flip into this kind of mode to fight, but then it's supposed to flip back into healing, repair state, and back to normal. And the problem is, when you flip into M1, and your energy production goes down on purpose, and your free radicals go up, there's this oxygen just sitting there still, because you're still breathing. So there's this oxygen sitting there, and if you have excess iron in your tissues because of iron-fortified foods all your life, and you don't have enough bioavailable copper because you don't eat organ meats and all your vegetables are grown in soil that's 81% depleted of copper compared to 1950, you don't have enough bioavailable copper, you have oxygen just sitting there. It's like a natural gas leak in your home, and all it needs is one little spark for the house to blow up. So you have this extra oxygen sitting around, and you have plenty of extra iron there because you've been eating excess iron from the standard American diet for 30, 40, 50 years, and the body has no known excretory mechanism to get rid of that iron, so it stores it. It stores it all throughout your tissues, and combustion happens. You have extra oxygen sitting around that's not going through the pathway to make energy because your mitochondria is in the low energy state because of the stressor. So now, big picture, put all this together, you're under constant stressors. It's not just germs and trauma anymore. It's everything it's emotional traumas and stressors. It's Wi-Fi and 5G and chemicals and mercury and you name it. We're under a onslaught. And then we don't have the copper because of the diet, and we're full of extra iron. So it's this perfect recipe. And that's why Morley and I keep going back to this. No matter what the complaint and what the disease label is and what the issue is, you can trace it back to this cell's just not working right. This cell is stuck in this pro-inflammatory, low-energy state. How do you get it unstuck? Get the excess iron out, get the bioavailable copper up.
And let's sharpen the point on that, because that's a very important distinction between M1 and M2. And what we're talking about is macrophages. And they can exist in two different states, M1, inflammatory, M2, wound repair. Where are 80% of the macrophages found? In our liver. That's a very important anatomical fact. It's an enormous repository of macrophages to keep us in balance. When the macrophage goes into M1 state, it's burning sugar via the Krebs cycle, which is a very, as you note, it's lower energy. Well, it's 32 units of ATP for one unit of sugar. When it goes into M2, it's burning fat. It's using the electron transport chain. And it's now producing 140 units of ATP from one unit of fat. A completely different metabolic process. But both of them require copper, believe it or not. But copper is especially important for the M2 function. Why? Because of wound repair. Every facet of wound repair, and in the article that I sent over this morning, Dr. Ben, talks about this copper peptide, the GHK peptide that Dr. Pickert isolated in 1973, it drives wound repair. And again, there's all this foment about wound repair, ignoring the fact that copper runs it. And then we have the fact that in that M1 state where the macrophage is trying to kill the pathogen, how does it do that? It's called phagocytic burst. That phagocytic burst requires copper. Ding, ding, ding. I mean, and so what we're talking about is these macrophages are incredibly intelligent entities in our body. They are the first line of immune response, as I understand it. And so they are oxygen sensors. And if they sense there's not enough oxygen, they direct the liver to make more ceruloplasmin. That's an established fact by Carolyn White in 2009. And they have the ability to toggle back between M1 and M2. They can kill pathogens, and they can repair wounds. I mean, at some level, you have to step back and just say, wow, this is an incredibly intelligent, powerful force in our body. And I would contend, call me crazy, but I would contend the macrophages are directed by the hypothalamus. I don't have any proof of that, but that's where the center of our subconscious intellect is. That's where the orchestration of all of the regulatory hormones originates. Well, it would make sense that sentient part of our brain, that thinking part of our brain that drives the balance of the human body, is going to have some kind of connection, electric or metabolic, or I don't know what it is, but there's some sensory connection between the hypothalamus and this incredibly important force in our body called macrophages. And so when those macrophages aren't able to recycle iron properly because they don't have a copper doorman at the back door, well, that iron starts to build up, and guess what it does? It affects the ability of the mitochondria inside the macrophage to produce energy. Do you think that might affect its ability to kill pathogens or repair wounds? Well, of course it does. And so it's all of this. This is the macrophage is only as good as its ability to be resilient and resistant, just what you were talking about, and it's dependent upon the mitochondria for the energy. And if the dietary iron that people have in their routine diet goes directly into the mitochondria. That's not a well-known fact. That was a study done by a German biologist in 2001. It goes right into the mitochondria. That's where the mechanism of energy collapse originates, because a mitochondria that has a lot of iron is not going to have a lot of oxygen. It's going to have a lot of oxidants, and those oxidants can't be turned into water because copper can only work with oxygen. And what I think is fascinating is the incredible impact that the lack of this Achilles heel called copper has on so many different dimensions. It almost defies reason. It's like, is it really possible that we're that dependent on this one metal? Well, when you think about the origin of the Earth, its evolution of oxygen and how that changed the whole chemistry, biochemistry of the Earth, well, then it makes more sense. But again, we're back to trying to unprogram Russians. You know, it's like well, this democracy thing is pretty cool. You know, you can do what you want to do. You can vote people in office, and people from a fascist world, they don't know what you're talking about. They're like, what do you mean vote? What does that mean? What do you mean activate oxygen? What are you talking about? What do you mean deactivate oxygen? They don't even know what the terminology is that we're talking about, because it's not been a part of their lexicon in their training. And I find it fascinating that there's this parallel universe of metabolism that centers around oxygen and ceruloplasmin and its key enzyme, ferrooxidase, that is completely silent in the training of health practitioners.
Right.
I find that fascinating.
It's not only a foreign language, a foreign country. It's like a whole other planet. It's like another universe, really. Huh. I mean, you talk to any conventionally trained doctor anywhere, not just here in Lubbock, Texas, but anywhere, about root cause resolution, about getting to the root cause of disease, they'll look at you like a deer in the headlights. I mean, I was the exact same ways before 7 years ago when the light turned on in my head. And I remember a patient even down in Post, Texas at Mold Clinic telling me she didn't want to take Nexium. She wanted me to get to the root cause of her reflux, and I literally didn't know what she was talking about. So these docs are so far off because of the training. They're not stupid, obviously. They're in medical school. They're very bright people, but they're not trained.
Absolutely.
But then beyond that, so that's just even thinking about diet, lifestyle, root cause of disease. But then it's a whole nother level to get down to this basics of metabolism of the cell and the mitochondria and the copper, iron, ceruloplasm. I mean, that's a different league in and of itself, because you can get in an integrative functional medicine realm like the conference in Dallas. I mean, there were, two or 300 doctors there, really smart folks, and they've seen the light as far as, hey, we need to quit treating symptoms with pharmaceuticals. That doesn't work. Obviously, we're the sickest country in the world and spending the most money doing it. It's total failure. So at least these doctors see that, and they've moved and shifted. But even to those guys, it's still foreign language when you start talking ferrooxidase function and bioavailable copper. It's just they haven't learned it. They don't know it. They haven't learned it. And it's this more basic, simple, it's the Occam's razor. I mean, is there something even more basic than throwing all these various symptoms at it? But I will say, at least they're looking at the mitochondria. At least they've admitted the D-ribose, CoQ10, all that stuff wasn't the answer. They are digging and looking and exploring it, and they're, you know, so give them credit for that, for sure. And they did talk about circadian rhythm, which there's no good pill for that. They were talking about lifestyle. You've got to be careful with your light going into your hypothalamus through the optic nerve. Be careful with your eating pattern and you know, get that eating window in and get some regularity to bedtime. And, you know, there's some basic stuff that could affect the mitochondria. And so, I mean, it was some good stuff, but they're just missing this one key function of the whole deal.
What do modern clocks run on today?
Copper batteries.
Yeah, they run on electricity.
Right.
And what's the backup plan? Is a copper battery in case the power goes out. Well, and I just was reading about that a few weeks ago, that the master clock, of course, is the SCN, suprachiasmic nucleus. That's a very big word that means there's a crisscross of the optic nerves in the brain, and supra means above, and it sits above the pituitary, and it sits below the hypothalamus, that crisscross of the eyes, and the suprachiasmic nucleus is closest to that crisscross, right?
Yeah.
So if there's static electricity coming from your eyes. The eyes are not an organ. They are nerve endings, gigantic nerve endings. And if there's a lot of UV light and a lot of blue light, even worse, it creates oxidants. And do you think the oxidants might build at the crisscross? Well, they do. It's a known fact. It's an anatomical fact. And the retina of the eye makes 8 times more ceruloplasmin than the brain. That's a pretty high concentration of ceruloplasmin in the body. And if you don't have that, oxidative stress is going to burn out the clock, the master clock, and that master clock is connected to every other clock that runs the body, the liver clock, the kidney clock, the lung clock, the stomach clock, the pancreas clock. Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
It's incredible. And folks, what we're talking about is this, the internal clock that every cell of your body is running its operations on this 24-hour rhythm, basically. So there's things your cells do during daylight hours, and there's things the cells do during nighttime hours. And mostly in the nighttime hours, it's the repair. That's when you're detoxing and repairing from the day's work and all the day's events. And so we need that nighttime. But more than just sleep, we need to be in sync. We need the rhythms and the hours to be in sync and being under man-made light all day long from these light bulbs and screens and iPads and phones, especially right before bed, with all the blue light coming off your screens, disrupts that normal rhythm, and that impacts the mitochondria. That's one of the things that will impact the mitochondria. I think we're up against a break. Morley, when we get back, a couple things if we have time for all of it, but we've had some questions on sources of bioavailable copper. I think Melody had a question about that,
sure.
Or a potential source. And then I give you a chance to talk about the diabetes connection. I know so much of your research over the past couple months you've been sending me is about this high blood sugar thing and how it's all related to excess iron and not enough bioavailable copper. So y'all stick with us. We're with Morley Robbins, his website, rcp123.org, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out the website, VeritasMedical.com, past archive programs. You can find it all there, VeritasMedical.com, also other pertinent information. And, of course, here on the show with us today, Morley Robbins and Melody Wilkes, health coach, here on the show. If you have a question along the way, 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800. All right, right back at it. So we were all discussing the light and everything in here. And I don't know how much light contributes to the copper biz, but it's probably a good something to talk about.
Well, it contributes to the dysfunction of your suprachiasmic nucleus, that part of the brain that controls your hormones.
Yeah.
And controls so many aspects of your metabolism in your body. So it obviously can cause the oxidants, too, as Morley was saying. It causes a free radical production. And if you have the right equipment in place, the firemen in place to put out the fire, it's okay. But bioavailable copper is needed to put out that fire.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, that you can stack up all these various stressors. I mean, you could do a whole show just on light, being under man-made light all the time instead of natural light. And that is a stressor, no doubt about it. It's a big topic at the conference. But a few weeks before that, I was at an EMF conference, and that's a whole different set of wavelengths. These wavelengths that aren't light, aren't visible, but it's a whole other set of impacts. We've talked about that on the show before. That's just another set of stressors, electromagnetic frequencies and 5G and Wi-Fi and all that. We started out the show talking about mercury in the ocean, but in dental fillings, the silver fillings are full of mercury and they leach into the body. But there's 80,000 different chemicals approved for production every year in the United States, and those haven't been studied in synergy. They'll study one chemical at a time to see what the maximum dose is. It'll kill half the population, but they don't study them in synergy. You know, what's lead plus mercury going to do to a cell? And I've quoted this study before that, and I'll probably get the numbers wrong, but basically the amount of mercury it takes to kill 1% of the rats, and you add that to the amount of lead it takes to kill 1% of the rats, you put those two together, that amount of mercury and lead together, it kills 100% of the rats. So the synergistic effect of all these toxins and stressors, you know, no one has any idea. But the body's equipped, should be, with defense mechanisms, defense systems to deal with all this, and that's the whole issue. Americans are living in a time and age where we're bombarded with a tremendous amount of stressors. Our cells are trying as best they can to defend themselves, but we've tied one, if not two, hands behind their back, and they can't defend themselves when they're iron-laden, when they're bombarded with excess iron, and when they don't have the bioavailable copper. Melody.
So let's just stay with that real quick.
Okay.
80,000 different elements that could potentially create chaos. Well, let's bring it down to a manageable, because 80,000 would suggest I need 80,000 ways to fight that problem. You don't. 80,000 agents create oxidative stress. There's one mechanism. It's all affecting the metabolism of oxygen. That's it. And so now we're down to a handful of oxidants with oxygen, that are stimulated and created by 80,000 different mechanisms, but it's all the same mechanism that's creating a handful of oxidants that are all neutralized by bioavailable copper. And what does iron do? It only intensifies the creation of those oxidants. That's all people need to understand, is that there's a singular mechanism that causes aging and a singular mechanism that causes ailments. And it's called oxidative stress. And as that oxidative stress builds, it becomes what's called inflammation. That's the second stage of oxidative stress. The third stage of oxidative stress is called cell death.
It reaches
a point where the cell can't survive the oxidation, so it gives up the ghost, and hopefully the tissue can make more cells. But those are the three stages of oxidative stress. Is we've got an imbalance between oxidants and antioxidant enzymes. We go to inflammation. It's way out of balance. And we go to cell death, and it's completely out of balance, and the cell dies. And people need to understand that hidden behind all of that is the need for more bioavailable copper and less dietary and supplemental iron.
Yep.
That's really trying to reduce all this down to some very simple things. And just real quick, just to plant the seed, because I know there's a question about a form of copper, but to salt our conversation about hyperglycemia, I think the listeners will find this a little surprising, maybe alarming. Sugar is a sweet form of iron. It is that toxic. And as a species, we were designed to make internal sugars based on our diet. And today we're being drowned by external sugars. That's the metabolic change that's occurred on the planet in the last 60 years.
Yeah.
We went from having the capacity to change our food into sugars, which is very natural and very manageable, to now we are overwhelmed by dietary sugar. And our system doesn't have the mineral capacity or the metabolic diversity to manage all that.
Right. I think we might have a caller. Do we, Wade?
I don't think so. I think
okay. Never mind. All right. So that a couple quick questions. Melody wrote down one just now about, is there any other way to get rid of iron besides blood donation? Because blood donation is your number one way to rid the body of that. My answer is there's a supplement called iDetox. It's a blend of nutrients that basically help to pull iron a little bit, but nothing like donating blood. So, Morley, do you have any answer there?
Intermittent fasting. All right. Triggers a mechanism called autophagy, which is it's a natural process of the cells cleaning house, if you will, and they recycle parts. But it's a very important mechanism that keys off of fasting. It also keys off of retinol. And what shuts down autophagy? Excess iron. And too much sugar. Both of them will shut down autophagy. Mm-hmm. So that's another mechanism. And what one of my students over in Norway is teaching me is the importance of B1, thiamine, that many people may know about B1. It was obviously the first B vitamin that was identified. But it has a very special relationship to get rid of excess iron in the cell. Now, what we're studying is what are the best ways to get it. Obviously, bee pollen and beef liver are very rich sources of B vitamins. Some people think we need to, in the beginning stages of this protocol, possibly supplement with more B1. I don't know that that's necessary, but we're looking into it because some people in the RCP community are having extraordinary results getting rid of excess iron via that mechanism. So it's we're discovering new facets of how we might do it. But I think the most proven ways are blood donation, the eye detox that you're referring to. There are other chelators like quercetin is a recognized chelator, and that product is actually in eye detox. There's IP6 is another recognized iron chelator that also is in eye detox. And then, of course, we have this intermittent fasting triggering autophagy. And now we have this new possibility, which is B1. And again, the key is how would we find a natural source of B1 other than beef liver? I don't know what it would be. But apparently it has B1 has a known ability to get rid of excess iron, especially in the mitochondria, which is a very important change to make.
Yeah. Let's move to copper. We know bioavailable copper is found in organ meats, especially beef liver. It's found in the oysters and seafoods. It's found in whole food vitamin C and therefore most colorful vegetables that have vitamin C, and berries have vitamin C. You want a whole food form, not ascorbic acid. But we've also mentioned that because of poor farming techniques, the soil's been depleted of a lot of minerals, but copper's the number one depleted. So if you're not eating organ meats and if you're not buying from a local regenerative ag, all your produce from a local farmer who's doing regenerative ag and has copper in their soil, you could still be missing out, possibly. But on the flip side, you don't need a whole lot either. We've talked about one penny of copper compared to 1 acre of iron. That's about the ratio in the body. So it doesn't take a whole lot. But I've had a couple of people just last week, cuprous niacin, I believe was the name of a supplemental form, that they asked me if that was a good form of copper. And then, Melody, you had one. Oh, it wasn't a supplement. It was copper pillowcase, wasn't it?
Yes. Copper pillowcase. I saw it at Bed Bath & Beyond, and I texted Dr. Ben. I was like, made me think of you, Morley. But it's infused with copper. I don't know how, but... And it's supposed to reduce the appearance...
They're weaving into fabric now.
Yes. That reduces the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles. And that they have all sorts of copper products there, like for your knees, copper socks, bracelets,
right.
Back braces.
Right.
So let's deal with that first. Copper, Mother Nature designed human beings to have copper inside the body, not outside the body. Now, does copper outside the body work? Yeah. I mean, there's definite benefits derived from those braces, copper bracelets, clothing, the pillowcases. They're using it in hospitals now to fight infections because copper is antipathogenic on contact. They know that. And where the copper needs to be, though, is inside our body so it can make ceruloplasmin so that it can express many, many different ways. As Dr. Ben says, it's the Swiss Army knife of our metabolism or our immune system, and he's right. And so copper inside the body is way better than copper on the outside. Although the outside copper is beneficial, it'll solve symptoms. It's not going to solve the underlying problem of the copper-iron conflict. As it relates to the cuprous niacin, or it's also called mitosynergy, it's developed by a guy named Charlie Barker. I know Charlie very well. We go back many years. Been to his lab in Flagstaff, Arizona. But Charlie challenged me for over 2 years about the relationship between copper and ceruloplasmin. He said, well, ceruloplasmin's irrelevant. And I just looked at him in disbelief. And some 2 years later, he acknowledged publicly that I was right, that ceruloplasmin was very important. And what I said to Charlie is, I said, when you can prove that your product increases Weriloplasmin, I will be happy to talk about it. I'm still waiting. On the other hand, what I came across this weekend was an article from some Italian researchers, and for those who are wondering, who are the brightest people on the planet about bioavailable copper and iron, it would be the Italians, because they've been dealing with iron-related problems since the beginning of time, because there's a lot of iron in their soil. And so the Italians really understand copper. And Musi and Calabrese are two very high-profile iron biologists, but they understand copper. And they did a study that revealed that a form of copper that I'd not been aware of is called copper histidine. Histidine is an amino acid, and it mimics the action of ceruloplasmin. Well, that's a big deal. And what's a form of copper histidine that you can get in a supplemental form? It's from a company called Skin Biology, made in Seattle, Washington. The website is skinbiology.com. And the product is called Serum Copper, and it's a tripeptide. It means it has three amino acids that are holding on to copper. It has glycine, histidine, and lysine. And that combination, again, going back to the article I sent you this morning, Dr. Ben, that combination is what activates and manages wound repair. It's the recognized metabolic mechanism for wound repair that Dr. Pickard isolated in 1973. And so I would recommend people seek out that. I've not worked with it directly. I'm going to be talking with Dr. Pickard later this week, but I really want to see if he's done any kind of studies with his serum copper, which is a cream. There's no oral form of it. The FDA will not allow it to be made. Only transdermal sources can be used. But to what extent has that product increased ceruloplasmin levels and activity? I'm confident that he's a curious guy that would have figured that out, and I just want to see what kind of research he has. So that's the key, is copper histidine is a, I guess it's a plan B that we can begin to seek out as a source of copper that mimics the action of ceruloplasmin, which is, I think it's a blockbuster discovery. And somehow that had eluded me for a number of years, but now apparently I'm ready and we're ready, and so we can begin to set our sights on that. The real nexus here is being able to measure the activity of ceruloplasmin. That's a very important blood test that's done in research labs. I'd love to see it be done in commercial labs. And now we find out there's a specific form of copper histidine, that's a mirror to the action of ceruloplasmin. So now we've got to find ways to get that in our body. And then we begin to offset this tsunami of inability to be resilient, inability to be resistant to these stressors that we're exposed to. And Dr. Ben, you're absolutely right. They just keep mounting day by day, year by year. But our ancestors had a different mineral profile. And what we're talking about via the use of the root cause protocol, via targeted diets, you know, especially organ meats, oysters, crustaceans, things like that, that we can, in fact, change the mineral composition of our body and regain that resilience and that resistance that was natural to our ancestors, that has been lost in the world of modern agriculture and modern food processing. And again, we don't need to look for reasons why or how did it happen. It's just it happened, and now what we're seeking to do is correct that and begin to bring that balance back so that our body is able to work with oxygen in both of its forms. The molecular form is O2, and the oxidants that have extra electrons that need to be reduced. And that's the whole key behind this process.
Right. Well, and I think it's worth a mention here in our closing minutes. you also need to be sure that you're keeping the copper that's in your body, keeping it in the usable active form, which is inside this Swiss Army knife, so that the Swiss Army knife can actually be opened up and function and used. So the copper's got to be in this ruloplasm, inside this protein, so that it can function the right way. If you just have free serum copper floating around, and there's some integrative doctors that will test your serum copper and see that it's high, and they'll do some things to try to drive it low because they think it's causing all these diseases. A little misguided, a little misunderstood, I would submit to them to consider. But more like in a bullet point, 1, 2, 3, what are the things that kick the copper out of the ceruloplasm, out of the Swiss Army knife, so that it can't be used?
How much time do we have?
You have 30 seconds.
30 seconds. No pressure. So head of the stream would be sugar, especially high fructose corn syrup, Roundup, anything GMO. Ascorbic acid, not that they're very different. Ascorbic acid is very different than whole food vitamin C that we talk about. And even though the bottle says vitamin C, turn it around and it'll back when it says ascorbate or ascorbic acid, you want to put it back on the shelf and find a form that like innate response or pure synergy, or there are several others, but not many, but there are other forms. The birth control pills, hormone replacement therapy, and antibiotics would be the kind of the top six that I would identify as that's a toxic swill of ways to destroy the Swiss Army knife. And we just need to be aware of that. And that while antibiotics are always billed as being life-saving, well, what they're doing is they're killing the bacteria. Yeah, they're very good. How are they killing the bacteria? By chelating the copper out of the bacteria. Do you think the copper chelation stops with the bacteria? Of course it doesn't. What is our gut filled with? Bacteria, of course. And so we just got to get smarter about what is the second and third order effect of these medications that we've taken for granted that have devastating effects now. And the most toxic form of antibiotic would be ciprofloxacin. And what does it do? It chelates magnesium and copper like a vacuum cleaner. And it's very common to get tendon tears and get all sorts of copper deficiency related conditions that most people don't even think about. And when is Cipro most prescribed for urinary tract infections? And there's a professor now at the University of Texas in Austin who can prove that one of the primary functions of ceruloplasm is to be an antibiotic for the E. coli that causes urinary tract infections. So it's just, again, we just have more lack of awareness on the part of conventional practitioners versus this parallel universe that we keep talking about, which is what Mother Nature intended all along. And it's just becoming aware of it and taking action to allow its greater prominence in our body.
Yeah. Well, that pretty much summarizes why we as an American population are so sick and have lost our resiliency. And when you combine, we don't eat organ meats anymore, and our soil's been so mismanaged, there's not much copper left in it. And then people have substituted sugar, high fructose corn syrup, Roundup, ascorbic acid, birth control pills, antibiotics. 80% antibiotics, by the way, are in the food, not at your pharmacist. Hormone replacement therapies, it's this perfect toxic soup, as Morley said. And then you add excess iron into all this, dietary iron, iron-fortified foods. It's this perfect storm. And then you tell everybody to eat low fat, and fat's where the retinol's at. We didn't really talk about retinol today, but we have before. So we have excess iron, not enough bioavailable copper, not enough retinol, and then this perfect storm of all these other things that kill our copper, the little copper we might have, and kaboom, we've lost our resiliency. We'll call it diabetes, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, MS, and Crohn's, and ulcerative colitis, and autism, and ADD, all these labels of symptoms, but the symptoms are manifestations of metabolic chaos. The cell cannot clear the exhaust properly. It cannot flip back to the healing state, a high energy healing state. It's stuck in a low energy blowing smoke exhaust out the tailpipe state. That's it in a nutshell. And root cause.
And the problem we've got, it's a beautiful analogy. We don't see the black smoke coming out.
Yeah.
It's in a blood test.
It's invisible.
It's very clearly presents in a blood test. And let me give people an image that they may or may not know about. There's a famous World War II historian. His name was Stephen Ambrose. And he wrote many books about the Second World War. But one of my favorites was the book entitled Citizen Soldiers. And it's an amazing story about why we were successful with the Normandy invasion. It had nothing to do with the paratroopers and all of the amphibious vehicles and all that. I mean, that, again, is very, very important. But what absolutely immobilized the movement of the GIs was French hedgerows. They were centuries old that marked off the farms in that part of France, and they were incredibly thick, and they were impenetrable to tanks, believe it or not. French hedgerows. And it was a GI from Iowa who said, well, you know, if we were to weld pipes on the front of the tanks, we could then separate the hedgerows and we could get the tanks through. And the commanding officer says, well, then let's do it. And that's why we were able to move troops into France during the Second World War. And that's the genius of a very simple change in our design can completely alter the resistance level in our body. And so all we're trying to do is get people to realize that this copper, when we begin to build it up in our body, it has a profound ability to move the metabolism forward. And then the tanks in our body, the macrophages, are like tanks. They can do amazing things once they're mobilized. But if they're stuck with iron behind a hedgerow, then we can't do anything. Maybe that'll give people another image to think about.
Great ending. Well, as usual, Morley, thank you. Another great show full of great information, and I think we hopefully tied it all into a nice little, with a little bow on top for people to understand it. We didn't even get to the diabetes part, so that's for a future show, but I can tell you in a nutshell, it's the exact same thing. Excess iron, not enough bioavailable copper. Same song,
absolutely.
50th verse. Morley, thank you. RCP123.org. First Monday in December, we'll do it again. Thank you very much for being with us, Morley.
Absolutely, and look forward to seeing you and Alan in a few weeks.
Yes, Weston A. Price Conference, the 15th, 16th, 17th in Dallas. If you haven't got your tickets, y'all go get them. It'll also be live streamed, I believe. Okay,
awesome.
Melody, Wayne,
okay.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate
thank
it.
Thanks. Bye, Morley.
Of course, you've been listening to Year of the Cure right here on AM 580. Check out VeritasMedical.com for, of course, shows and archive programs. If you just caught us late, we'll be up on the website later on today. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week right here on Year of the Cure.